Fridays, especially the Fridays of Lent, are days of sacrifice, days in which we recall and in some way share in the sacrifice of Christ. Good Friday is next week. And since next week we're going to be focusing on the details of the Passion, today I'd like to focus a little bit on suffering or sacrifice from a more generic, more general perspective. By the way, that's why we don't eat meat today, because it's Friday. That's just part of the tradition. But there are many ways in which we participate. We willingly make sacrifices today. Maybe that idea of Fridays having significance is largely lost, because all days are kind of lost nowadays. You know, Sundays aren't particularly different than any other day, and people can work from home, and people can work with their phones and go anywhere, and any day can be almost any day. That's how it feels nowadays. But it's important, first of all, not to lose the Lord's Day, Sunday, but it's also important to keep the character of Friday. Part of why this is important is because we're always fighting the temptation or the illusion that we don't have to suffer. That if only something would change, we would be fine. If only I had more money, if only I had whatever, a better family or a bigger house, or if only I weren't sick, I would be fine. I would be happy. I would have no suffering. And that's always wrong. It's always not true. There's no such thing in this life of having no sufferings or no trials. It's just not reality. So a good dose of reality is very healthy for us. You know, that tendency to think that nothing bad should happen, or if it does happen, we should just not think about it, or just, you know, don't say anything about it. Try as much as we can to avoid bad things or suffering. It backfires. So a healthy approach, even psychologically, but especially spiritually, is to say, well, this is how it is. We do live in a world of suffering. We have sufferings. And what do we do with that? Now, in the readings today, we have examples of people who are facing suffering and calling out to the Lord, or at least persevering. They're not defeated by the threats against them. I'm talking about Jeremiah in the first reading and Jesus in the Gospel, both of whom are threatened with suffering, with persecution. These lines from the Psalm stood out for me, kind of a poetic description of a person who feels threatened. The breakers of death surged round about me. The destroying floods overwhelmed me. The cords of the netherworld enmeshed me. The snares of death overtook me. That's a person who's really in deep distress. He's overwhelmed by the prospect of suffering and death. And that is our experience sometimes. Maybe not right now, but maybe right now. Maybe right today. You're carrying a real burden, or you feel threatened by real serious problems on the horizon. The cords of the netherworld enmeshed me. I can't get free of this. So what do? We can't just pretend that it's not so. It doesn't get us anywhere. We can't just go to Disneyland and then think everything is fine and we're going to live happily ever after. That's fairy tale stuff. It doesn't happen like that. So what do? Well, one direction that is becoming more common nowadays is just to give up and say, well, I'd be better off dead anyway. The suicide option. More and more people are thinking that since life is full of suffering and I don't like it, well, I'll just end it. Wrong answer. It's a very seriously wrong. It's a self-destructive direction to take. So the other direction is to trust in the Lord, to call on the Lord, and that's what we see here. In fact, it's right in the psalm. In my distress, I called upon the Lord, and He heard my voice. I love you, Lord, my strength, my Lord, my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my rock of refuge, my shield, my horn of salvation, my stronghold. In other words, if I have any hope of dealing with this overwhelming crisis, it's the Lord. He's my refuge. And this is certainly true. But it doesn't mean that as soon as we call on the Lord, all our problems are solved. Obviously, it doesn't mean that, because it didn't mean that for Jesus himself, and it didn't mean that for Jeremiah. Let's look at Jeremiah here. Jeremiah, where all the prophets suffered in their ministry, all of them. But Jeremiah is the one who's the most descriptive when it comes to his own experience of suffering. In fact, when he was called, the Lord said, I'm going to send you, and you're going to be opposed, you're going to be persecuted, but I'll make you like a wall of brass. I'll make you like a fortified city. I'll be your defense, your refuge. But you're going to have trouble with this mission. So God told him this from the beginning, and it certainly happened that way. He proclaimed the word, and he got persecuted for it. So in this reading today, he's talking about this experience. He can hear people whispering threats about him and toward him on every side. They're just waiting for a chance to pounce on him, and he knows it. He calls on the Lord. He puts his trust in the Lord, but it doesn't mean that they stop threatening him. It doesn't mean that his troubles are over. It just means that he has a light at the end of the tunnel. He has a reason to persevere. He has God on his side, and that changes everything, even though the present circumstances don't change at all. Look at Jesus. This is today's gospel. The Jews pick up rocks to stone him. That happened a couple of times in Jesus' public ministry, where he was threatened with stoning. One time he was threatened with being thrown over a cliff. Several times he was threatened with being arrested. It's not like he didn't know he had enemies. He did. The Jews actually had a little bit of a dilemma, because in their tradition, certain sins were defiling. All sins were defiling, but you couldn't touch a sinner without being defiled. So that's why stoning was a good way to get rid of people, because you didn't have to touch them. You just throw stones at them. But while they're looking for stones, Jesus can just walk away. So the other thing they want to do is arrest him. They want to grab him, you know, put him in custody. But in order to do that, they have to touch him, and then they might be defiled. So in this gospel, it starts out with them wanting to stone him. At the end of the gospel, it says they tried to arrest him, but he escaped. So either way, Jesus is still in charge. I've said this before. In John's gospel, you always get the sense that Jesus is orchestrating the whole thing. There's no time in which he's taken by surprise. So it's not yet the hour for him to lay down his life. It's not time yet for him to be arrested and killed. So he keeps eluding them. But the threat of persecution is always there. Now, what this tells us, or one of the things it tells us, is that it's normal for us to be in this in-between place, between having called out to the Lord and having the solution be presented to us. So we suffer, or we feel the threat of suffering, or we're afraid. We call out to the Lord. That's the right thing to do. But then in calling out to the Lord, it doesn't immediately change the circumstances. It changes our own inner disposition. It opens us to recognize what God is doing and to find peace in his protection. But it doesn't change necessarily the circumstances. Sometimes it does, you know, miraculously it can happen. But sometimes it doesn't seem to change anything outside, it just changes us inside. And then we're able to persevere because we say, I'm trusting in the Lord and I know he's going to take care of me. How and when he's going to do it, I don't know that part. We don't know. But we don't have to live in fear. We don't have to live in the intimidation or the living under threats all the time, because the ultimate victory is already ours in Jesus Christ. Jesus, in this gospel, reveals why he doesn't have to worry about them stoning him or accusing him of blasphemy or whatever. And it's all has all to do with his relationship with the Father. You accuse me of blasphemy, I'm doing the works of my Father, I'm doing what my Father sent me to do. You think your threats are going to stop me? If I'm not performing the Father's works, okay, don't believe me. But if I perform the Father's works, well then you have something to account for here. I'm not the one who's intimidated. You have a responsibility to respond to what God is revealing to you here. Believe these works so that you may realize and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. No one ever said things like that. I mean, Jesus is absolutely unique in his, well, first of all, he is unique. He's God and man. And the way he speaks reveals that he is God and man. That's why he doesn't have to be intimidated. He does know he's going to suffer, but he's deliberately facing that suffering because he knows that's the Father's plan. He even wants it to happen in his deeper self. I mean, his human nature doesn't want to suffer any more than ours does. No one wants to suffer. But so he's not a masochist. He doesn't love suffering for its own sake, but he wants to do the Father's will. He's 100% dedicated to the Father's will. So he won't be intimidated by any threats of persecution. And this is what is available to us living in this threatened condition or this situation in which persecution and suffering is always looming over us, in which the cords of the nether world are enmeshing us and the breakers of death are round about us. But in this situation, we don't have to be intimidated. Say, well, God will save me. He will either save me from the present distress, heal me or solve the problem, or if he doesn't, he'll give me the strength to persevere. And in the end, he will take me to heaven. If God is for us, who can be against us? That's the attitude that Jesus reveals here. If we're one with the Father through Jesus Christ, no contest. So it doesn't mean we won't suffer. Jesus certainly suffered more than we can imagine. But it means that suffering is not the last word, and that victory, real victory, is a certain future if we persevere in faith.